Good evening, hockey fans. Welcome to the NHL Lockout. I mean the Hockey Writers Live.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the debut episode of the Hockey Writers Live. I'm your host, Chris Wasslin. God, if this sounds a lot like the program did, it's probably going to, at least for a little while. As always, we bring on our usual cast of characters and a couple new ones as well. First off, of course, I'd like to introduce my co-patriot-in-arms, and I use that term very egregiously today, Mr. Timothy Rosenthal. Good evening, Timmy.
Hockpocalypse 2012. So my question is, does the robot get paid?
We're working on getting some. We might have a few new wrinkles in place. We'll be working on that over the next few weeks. We'll sneak them in, I promise. Obviously, we have Timmy on. And, of course, joining us is I need to have a fellow New Jersey present, as always, here. And I know I'll get the bias like I always do. Classic East Coast bias. I bring on Mr. Joshua Smith from the Hockey Writers. Good evening, Josh.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here, although don't let the East Coast bias fool you that the New Jersey allegiances don't go that far, since I am a fan of all things blue, so the blue shirts and the blue jackets.
We'll let it slip this time. I'm not, to be entirely truthful, I'm kind of the one that isn't exactly the biggest East Coaster in the air. So, we did get banished in Southern California for 4 years, and that's why I have a little bit more of a hockey background than most people think. Oh, it's you're from the East Coast. No, not the case. Speaking of more East Coast, as if we didn't have enough, with a little expertise for the city of Buffalo and Washington, mind you, we bring in an actual author. And of course, our first guest to join us on the roundtable this evening would be Mr. Ted Starkey. Good evening, Ted.
How are you guys doing? Welcome to the new show. 2004, you basically just had to watch baseball and basketball. It was a dark time.
Yeah, think of the differences. 2004, no Twitter. 2004, no Facebook. I could be wrong on this. MySpace is probably in its infancy at best.
So, as Bill Belichick would say, he still wouldn't do Twitter or MySpace or whatever it's called.
Right. I mean, there were a lot less in the way of options. You couldn't sit there, for example, at 4 a.m. on a Monday morning. I could not sit there with a clear conscience, put on whatever's on the internet, go over to, I'm not going to give away sites here. Of course I am. If there's KHL that you want to watch, we will find the appropriate site for you. You can go over to the English part of the KHL site for scores, obviously, but live TV, live TV is the best thing. It really is.
I will say that I watched one of the KHL games. It was pretty entertaining to see some hockey. The quality was pretty good, which, back on the last lockout, I don't think any of us had the speeds that we have now, so it really would have been painful to watch. We're spoiled with high def as it is, so I can't imagine what the online feed would have been in 04. But the only thing that's holding me up with the KHL is my Russian is not fluent enough to make any sense of the play-by-play.
Really?
It's a good chance to explore some music while I watch the hockey. It actually came to be pretty fun, but those Russian announcers, they sound like they're having a blast. I wish I knew what they were saying.
Some of it's fun. There's no doubt of it. You can tell when they get really angry, though. I mean, it's very demonstrative at the minimum. The best one is, I'm trying to remember, HC Bratislava. Obviously, their games are not in Russian. And, that first instance of when a goal is scored on them, and you can hear the guy, the one time it slipped, like it came out later, the guy dropped 3 F-bombs in the span of 10 seconds. And I would have never known it. I admit, foreign languages, not always my forte. French, Italian, English, sure. Russian, Czech, Slovak, etc. It just looks like a bunch of symbols to me. That's kind of how people have to look at this, but let's face it, there's going to be a lot of players that go over. And never mind the KHL. You're going to have the Swedish Elite League, you'll have the Finnish League, you'll have the Deutschland Elite League, better known as the German League. There are options.
And if you want to read up on KHL coverage, you can actually do it with Google Chrome, and which would obviously translate for you from Russian to English.
We're in doubt. We just get Dmitry Chesnikov to translate it.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, just be careful if you get any Washington Capitals goaltenders to give an interview that you translated appropriately before moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some things apparently get lost in translation. So apparently taking a shot at your teammates and calling people out is a translation error, depending on who you ask.
Okay, a big hearty shout-out to Bruce Hollandrick for getting the logo and embedded player up faster than Haley's comment onto the Hockey Writer site. I'm impressed. I didn't even notice it. That's how scatterbrained I've been all that. I'm dead serious. It's really been that bad. But this is what we're at, folks. We're at a point in the negotiations where there, A, are none. If you believe what's going on, sometime around October 1st, there will magically be negotiations, and we'll have a season around Thanksgiving or the first week of December. I said that 3 months ago. Guys, I don't know about you. I'm not sure about that now. I really have my doubts.
It doesn't seem like it's moving in the right direction, but I have to think that both sides are going to have to work hard, because they're going to realize what a hit it'll be on both sides of the fence as the owners start losing the gate that they'd get and the players stop getting paychecks. That I'm hoping that it's really going to force both of them to get down. You know, if we have to lock everybody in a room, everybody likes to throw that one out there, but whatever needs to get done to hammer something out, because it's just going to start hurting the league, the players, and the owners more and more the more it drags on. But yeah, I'm with you, Chris. I'm not optimistic that we're getting closer. It seems like we're getting further away.
Well, Chris, you know, I know we've talked about this on the program before. You know, I think the basic difference between 2004 and 2012 is 2012 is basically just splitting the revenue, which is, it's $3.3 billion, but it's relatively easy compared to the cap. I think, you know, the kind of track you're talking about is pretty accurate. I think the players are content to wait because they'll, you know, they don't have to worry about losing a paycheck until October. The owners are going to have to scrap the preseason game soon anyway, so they're probably not going to really bunch too much, and you'll probably see around October 1, both sides will start to come together a little bit. And it's a relatively simple problem. The only X factor is interesting. We talked to Brooks Leich, who's the Capitals NHLPA rep, on Friday, and his comments were pretty pointed, and he said he felt the owners kind of really beat the players down, and they were not happy with the first offer. And I think there's a sense the NHLPA has to come out of with this with somewhat of a win. It may not be an actual win because, you know, billionaires versus millionaires, the billionaires are always going to win. But I think there has to be a sense that the players made out okay. And that might be the biggest obstacle actually getting a deal done.
And I guess the silver lining in all of this is the TV deal that they signed last year, too. Because it would be hard to imagine that even a year or two after they signed the deal that they would be in this position to begin with.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing, too, is you got to remember both the players and the owners are making money. And, you know, at some point, I pointed out earlier today that, you know, 43% of $3.3 billion is still greater than half of, like, $2.7 billion. So at some point, even if you get a bigger slice of the pie, if you shrink the pie too much, you're going to end up with less money anyway. I think both sides have a point where they're going to say, we can live with this. And I think, you know, it's kind of just right now the way labor negotiations work, both sides, it seemed inevitable they were going to a lockout because it didn't seem like they wanted to make a deal without any pressure on the other side. And now they're hoping to put enough pressure on the other side that they can get a deal, you know, the best deal they possibly can.
And ultimately, with where this is going and a protracted lockout, do you really see it ending more than plus or minus one percentage point from that 50-50 mark?
No. I think we all know where it's headed. I mean, you know, the owner's first offer wasn't great, but, you know, people don't understand this. It's a process. You go back and forth, and you negotiate on things. Everything's going to become a bargaining chip. But, yeah, I would be shocked if it's anywhere different than that 50-50, at least, you know, in semblance. You know, maybe it'll be 52 going down to 48, but there'll
right.
be some kind of, you know, it'll be an even split between the two parties, and it's just a matter of how they get there.
Now, of course, you've seen by now what difference Twitter makes in this. Either, you know, good and bad. And obviously, you know, we talked to a few people. Matt Cockle brought up this one. The classic games lost due to labor strike or lockout. It was 92. The NFL? NBA, 504. Darn. Major League Baseball, yeah, they might have lost that whole, you know, August, September, ruined the Montreal Expos. 938. The NHL, 1698 and counting. It's ironic that the sport that has lost the most games also has the most dependency of revenue based on ticket price. I mean, we're talking almost half. In some cases, if you read the Forbes article from this week, it said straight 50%. Basically, it doesn't make as much of a difference if you don't buy tickets right now because there's no games anyway. You can't sit there and hurt them with buying, you know, not buying jerseys because the jerseys are already bought. The question for everybody at this point is this. You bought the ticket. I mean, the best example of all is Toronto. The fans are actually dumb enough to see a mediocre product. I'm sorry. If I had to see that team for as constituted for one more game than I had to, I'd be running for the exit. And they're not the only team that's constituted like that. Calgary's another one now, and it's amazing after the supposed no goal or goal by Martin Jalinas in 04 that they haven't been the same the last pretty much 3 or 4 years. They've been stuck in this, well, we're almost in the playoffs. We may make it a little, we may not make it.
And how they weren't in rebuilding mode before that, before the last few years,
yeah.
is beyond me.
Yeah, they've been content to tread water in that, you know, 7, 8, 9 position in the Western Conference, and inexplicably so.
Yeah. Why are they content to do it? To be honest, it's partly because of, you guessed it, the salary cap. You know, they're gonna spend and spend and spend, and like it's no one's business. And the fact that the spread is not that much, you saw it this year briefly when it got up to over 70 million. We're gonna have teams that have to spend almost 55 million just to make the floor. It doesn't matter who you blame at this point. Players, owners, fans in some cases, like Forbes did. And they have a point, too. Everybody has a point in all this. The blame is not just on one party or another. It's on so many different facets that it takes too long to explain it. It's just something at this point that needs to get done. Find a way, make it happen, do what you gotta do. Problem is, it's gonna take a little while for that to happen. It's gonna frustrate a lot of people, no matter how this turns out. No one's gonna be happy, because you never are in negotiations. And we're either gonna have a 48, 55, 64, or 72 game season. We're gonna lose games. There is no question about that. We will lose games. Because you have to, common sense says 2 to 3 weeks to get ready. Yes, it's a late start this year because there's no European games. It's as if they knew. But if they're actually, guys, if they're not going to start talking until October 1st, you're looking at best Halloween. Am I nuts or not?
Yeah, I think you're even on the early side of things.
Yeah.
I've heard that Thanksgiving date being thrown around there, and I really think that at this point that's their target. They want to have the game up and running before Thanksgiving. I'd be shocked to hear anything even progressing to the point of getting games back on the schedule until sometime in November. And not that I want to look at silver linings in the lockout, and I know that there's very little chance of this happening because of the dependence on ticket sales. But man, a shortened season could be one of the better things to happen to hockey. I don't think that this is the way you want to go about it. But man, trimming off 10 to 12 games and shortening up the season and realigning the conferences as well as how you balance the schedule, I really think it could improve the game to not stretch it out as long and as far as we do. So if I have to look at a silver lining, I think playing hockey in from November to, well, June's a little late for me, but playing starting in November, provided they don't try to pack in as many games as possible and keep the same pace they would over the 82-game season, I think it might be good that come playoff time you see teams that aren't quite as beat up, players that still have a little bit more left in the tank, and you get to see some really good hockey, provided that we do get to see any hockey at all.
I'm going to be interested in my big question between 2004 and 2012. It seems to be a lack of education with the fans this time around, because I remember 2004, the league made no bones about that they were going to have a labor dispute. They warned people 6 months in advance, of their ticket refund policies, of, other issues that would come. And, this past weekend was the first time some teams acknowledged that the lockout might actually happen, which I've been getting a lot of people who are upset. They're tweeting at me and saying, I planned the trip out to the West Coast to see a team, and now it's, the game's probably not going to happen. And they're pretty furious with what's going on. And I'm a little interested to see if there's kind of a fatigue factor and a lack of education factor that, if this lockout goes a decent length, that they may actually see worse damage than they did in 2004 just because they didn't really prepare the fans for it.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, in some areas, I've heard nothing but lockout talk, but I've come across a few fans locally here that I've run into, a couple guys that I know, even playing some pickup hockey, that, we're talking about hockey season like they're excited for it, and heard that there were talks but had no idea that it was at this point where we'd have a lockout or that there was even the possibility that a season might not happen.
Exactly. And I know in Washington, ever since the tickets have become popular, you have to pay, usually they pay monthly, and they've been paying since April in installments, so you're almost, your tickets are probably almost half paid for, and now the Caps are just going to be basically sitting on your money with 1% interest, and a lot of people aren't real happy with that because obviously you paid that much money in advance and the team's just going to sit on it. I mean, I think if it, obviously if it's short, maybe to Thanksgiving it may blow over. It's just an interesting aspect that I sense a lot more anger in this one just because it doesn't seem, the league sold the salary cap as being the solution to the league's problems. The league you know, if you saw the league statement today, it basically was like, sorry, you know, we'll try to meet around the clock if we can. And they didn't really give you a reason for it. And I think, you know, I just am a little concerned with the state of the game in terms of trying to, you know, not really explain what's going on and kind of taking the fans for granted. And I think, as I said, there's a little bit of fan fatigue because, you know, no other sport since 92 has gone through four labor disputes and each time getting progressively worse. So I'm just a little bit curious about what the reaction going to be if, you know, a significant amount of games are lost.
It's going to have a pretty dramatic effect. I know people are going to say, yeah, we're going to come back. And there's, honestly, yeah, most of them are going to come back. But I can tell you right now, there's already people I know that just, they'll come back, but it'll almost be like, yeah, it's the NHL. I might go to a couple games. That's it. I'm pretty well functionally done. You know, then you move up a little. There's the person that admittedly will go, okay, I've got other options. There's pickup leagues that I can play in. There's, you know, there's little junior leagues. There's little semi-pro leagues all over the place. Hey, there, you know, I could, let's say Albany is 30 minutes away. I can go see Albany play. You know, if you're out in Southern California, you could drive a couple hours to Ontario or a little bit up see the Bakersfield team play. And there's options that just were not there before. And
yeah, you're definitely right about the options. And as far as the you know, it depends on where you're at, and for some of those teams, you know, New York, Toronto, the big markets, they're not going to have to worry. But you know, you don't want those fans in Tampa or Phoenix or even Dallas to find too many other options, because if you're having a hard time bringing fans in over the past season or the past few seasons, giving them an opportunity to find other things to entertain them might be something that they don't recover from. You know, even Columbus, a place that's really trying to build its fan base, has a small group, some loyal fans out there. You know, this could really stunt them. You know, they were hyped up having the All-Star game, which is at risk of being canceled. You know, they're trying to support the base. Their new lease agreement helped, but you take something like this for a marketplace that's building and give all those people something else to do over the winter, and you're going to have a hard time getting them to come back.
And let's not forget the mess on Long Island, which, like it or not, is a whole mess other situation to begin with.
You mean the political hot potato that is the New York Island?
Yes.
No, based on the crowds I've seen on Long Island, they've had a lockout going for a few years now.
Probably since they got their last sellout in, what, 2007, during the Cup playoffs? Their first round loss to, I forget who they lost to, but it was Ottawa, I want to say?
Buffalo,
yes.
Well, like Chris, you were talking about the salary floor. I mean, the Islanders are a classic team, but the salary floor is just not a good thing for the team because, you know, it's one of those things where no one wants to play on the island. And, you know, you saw that they went into the summer with big plans of trying to get some, you know, actual main talent to the island and can't do it. So, you know, to make up the salary floor, you got to get either dead cap money or bad cap money. And then you're still going to be drawing, you know, 11,000 to a dilapidated arena in Nassau County. You know, I think everything's pointing to right now to them eventually ending up in Brooklyn, just because, you know, the time to actually get a new arena built in Nassau is quickly running out, and they're going to need a facility, and that's probably going to be the next best thing they have.
And this is where, as we're coming up to 8:30 already. Jeez, time flies when you have to talk about the CBA and you really didn't want to. But the nice part is we've been able to successfully mix in the CBA with things not necessarily related to it that you can do, but you do not want to stab yourself with millions and nails. It's just, look, it's tough. I understand it's not the same even on a Sunday. I kind of look around. It's like there's no hockey. You know, there's no talk of training camp and this and that and everything else. To every fan out there, look, you tried. There's not much you can do. We're at the mercy of them, but in the same token, you're not. You do have all these options, and you're probably going to have more. Even the fantasy hockey fans, because I get bombed with questions from every single angle. What are you going to do about this? Or is there going to be... I mean, the funny part is, in the last year, folks, particularly the last year to 18 months, the explosion of daily fantasy sports leagues have been through the roof. And you know, last year they started them for fantasy hockey. They're considering doing that for the AHL this year. So there's hope there. Brandon Ross from the Hockey Guys is doing a fantasy OHL league. There's probably a few spots available, even if you go over to the hockeyguys.net. And it's not, you think it's hopeless, and it really isn't. And yeah, it's not the same. I get that, but it's not the end of the world. Now, in all fairness, we need a little laughter. Look, it's been a depressing weekend, the team, you know, the lockout, all the gloom and doom. I understand the ugliness. Now we're going to try and make you laugh a little. We hope. This show, because of the lockout, there was only one way that we could go. And, of course, we would bring on, naturally, one of the funniest hockey men I know. And that would be, of course, Sean McIndoe, who's better known as Down Goes Brown. Good evening, Sean.
First show of the year, and we get the gremlins again. That didn't take long, only 31 minutes.
Why does this always happen with the gremlins?
Because
I blame the lockout.
I blame Batman myself.
But if this works, good evening, Sean.
Hey, how about now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfect. Go figure. Yeah, maybe something happened. Maybe Uncle Gary figured out to tap into our lines. I don't know. It wouldn't be the first time. But, you know, first off, welcome to the Hockey Writers Live. We need some laughter, Sean, let's face it. It's been a tough couple of months. For me, it was so good, and then Dustin Brown kept sitting on everybody in the finals, and so did Jonathan Quick. It was depressing.
I guess it would be my as a Maple Leaf fan, my heart bleeds for you that you've had to suffer through a 4-round playoff run. That must have been just totally awful.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I guess right. my comments about shortening the season don't apply to Maple Leaf fans. They haven't played hockey in May in years.
Exactly. Yeah. No. It's our seasons are usually over by November, so we're fine with the shortened.
Except for that one year, which I always hear about from Adam Pertil all the time. It's like, you know, that one year where you could have just put somebody in the shootout that was good at shootout, so we could have snuck in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, that, we are still a little bitter over that. The whole Scott Clemenson situation is, we're other than Tom Kerber's, that's pretty much the worst thing you guys have ever done to us. So we're still a little upset.
Wow, I cannot believe Tom Kerber's. Holy crap! Now I know I'm old. That's what I know. But look, you got a lot of big things coming out, Sean. Obviously, you have the now. It's what, a weekly column over the National Post?
Yeah, during the season, typically it's twice a week. We usually go Tuesdays and Saturdays now. And during the off season, it drops down to once a week, and obviously at this point we're basically in a permanent state of off season, so we haven't really talked about what we're going to do if this goes on for a long while. But my guess is it's we're probably going to stay at one a week for at least the near future.
Now, you've come up with probably, and I managed to read this because I get nice advanced copies from people that I don't even know half the time. You have to talk about the book. And this is, let's face it, there's funny, and then there's, I can't even eat a meal while reading this book.
That's I hope that's a compliment. So I'll take it away. Yeah, no, we get the book is The Best of Down Goes Brown, and it is available, more or less available now. It sort of depends where you are and you know what your local bookstore is up to. But if you're in Canada, all the online stores are shipping it now, and most of the stores are starting to get it this week. In the States, it seems like things are a little bit behind, but I think Amazon is getting ready to ship it this week, and it should be showing up in stores. And yeah, it's basically 70 chapters, 70 posts, whatever you want to call it, when it's in book form, and it's about two-thirds best of, so about two-thirds is stuff that has appeared on my site over the years that's been popular, that people have really responded well to. And then the other third is brand new stuff. It's the stuff that I've written just for the book. It's not from the website. It'll never be on the website. You'll never find it anywhere other than right in the book. And there's some good stuff in there. So it's we're trying to sort of be the best of both worlds here. And if you're a longtime fan and you know all the best stuff by heart, then that's great. There's you can get it all in one spot, plus some new stuff you've never seen before. And if you're brand new and you're listening to me right now and you have no idea who I am or what I'm talking about, then you're going to have 70 chapters of brand new stuff. And I hope in either case it'll give people a laugh and just sort of, you know, remind people, especially these days, that there was a time when hockey was fun and you could laugh about it and, you know, it could put a smile on your face and wasn't all...
Now, Timmy, do you want to bring this one up or do I?
I think you do.
It
I don't know why.
It is simply known, Sean, as the flowchart.
Yes. The you're referring to, I'm assuming, to the suspension flowchart.
Yes, the holy grail of flowcharts, basically.
Yeah, easily the most popular post that I've ever done, probably the best known. It's I guess it's coming up probably about 3 years now, so it was out for a long while, and yeah, it's definitely there. It's not only in the book, but it is the cover of the book. It's that well known that the publisher decided they were just going to go ahead and throw it right on the cover. And it's been it was a big hit when it came out, and then it just seemed like it took on this life of its own because for whatever reason, you know, obviously like everything I do, the whole thing is just intended as a joke. It's parody. It's having some fun with the league. But it just ended up being accurate. On it seemed like it had this streak of incident after incident where it would always end up being the predicting whatever the final suspension was going to be, and it kind of took on this life of its own where things would happen on the ice, and immediately, like, I wouldn't even see what happened. I would just be on Twitter, and suddenly I'd have 10 people in my feed going, "Oh, we got to go to the flowchart." And I think, okay, what did somebody do now? And I was probably the only guy in hockey that, you know, when somebody would throw a flying elbow at some other guy's head and get stretchered off the ice, you know, everyone else is horrified, and I'm sitting there like, yes, here comes another big day of flowchart traffic. So it's been fun, and I've done some others, and in fact, one of the pieces of exclusive content in the book is I did a flowchart for determining whether a goal should count or not. Because that's the other area that I've never understood what the logic is, and there doesn't seem to be any consistency to it. So I sat down, and I think I pieced it together.
Do you have a clause in there for Brett Hull in Buffalo?
Yes, there are. I won't give it away, but let's just say there is a nod to both the Buffalo Sabres as well as the 2004 Calgary Flames. They will... They do get their acknowledgement. They're square in the flowchart.
Sean, based on that information alone, I'm in the process now of downloading it for my Kindle. So,
excellent.
You've sold me on this one.
That's one sale. Awesome.
at this rate, Sean will be able to start his empire of world domination to get the Toronto Maple Leafs into the playoffs.
Exactly. Yeah. I only need to do about 10,000 more podcasts now, and I'll be all set on this thing.
Well, Chris, there's no possible better time to release a book than right now, as we all know.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess next at this rate, I'm just going to have to come out with my book of parodies. This might take a while, though. I have a few more songs to write, aside from that Parisi one that really pissed off Minnesota. So much so that we almost got a cease and desist letter from Hockey Wilderness over this one.
Excellent.
Yeah, this
from
is good.
Well, I hear those guys are fun.
They're fun, though. I mean, it was done. It was one of those cease and desist orders that you knew was a joke. So
okay.
At first, when it came across my email at about 3 a.m., I'm sitting there going, what? And then obviously you read through it, and you know it's not official, and you go, well, you got me.
Yeah.
There are certain organizations who I think would give us a cease and desist over Hockey Wilderness any day of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Philadelphia Flyers? Oh, wait.
No, not even them. You know who I'm, but it's somewhat related to them. I think you know
Wait. Am I going to have to pull this one? No, I can't do it. It's Family Show. I really can't.
You can still pull it out. We can.
All right, let's put it this way.
Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, there is one organization that will never have their head on this show, and that's obviously Hockey Bus. We did kind of play something that might have been slightly inappropriate in a previous incarnation. Okay, who am I kidding? We basically accused the Eklund's wife of having various affairs. And we're at ones at that. And a few things that could only be best described in Pittsburgh as the Tuesday Night Hummer Club.
Yeah. I can't imagine why he would object to that.
I don't know.
It seems so harmless.
Did you guys have any proof of that, or did you just score it as an E5?
We just honestly, this is kind of what happened in this. And we do apologize. We sent out an interview request to Julie Robbenheimer. It was a formal request. We were nice about it. We were willing to have her on the show. And then, unfortunately, some person stole a Ilya Kovalchuk rumor. This gets tied into a few different things. Kovalchuk rumor was clearly on the program site. It wasn't like we sat there and just put it up at the last minute and it was thrown
together. Was this the same one where you had the lock thread on HF boards?
Yes. Sean, we actually managed to get a thread locked on HF boards in less than 60 seconds.
Wow.
And the trade actually happened. Worst part of it all. It was that much of a joke that it was something you never thought could happen, and then 2 days later it happened.
Yeah.
The good news is, Chris, with this being a new show and all, we can have another go at trying to get him back on.
Oh, yeah. It's like, wait a minute, it's repackaged. Sure, wait. Hold on. Yeah, I don't know that Chris Wassel guy. No, not involved in it at all. That Tim Rosenthal character? No, he's not there either. I mean, look. We did this for a reason, and the goal of the show is to simply be as unique as possible, to have a sense of humor, and to be able to interview a lot of influential hockey people. That's always the goal. People don't want to just be informed. They want to be entertained, off of it. And with there being no NHL, they have to do something.
And Sean, with there being no NHL, where's your focus going to lie until we get the NHL back? Are you looking local, minors? Do you think you're going to jump into the KHL? Or what's your take on how to fill in the gap?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, for me, as a writer, the focus is unfortunately going to be on the CBA. I mean, I write about the NHL. That's my main focus. So I got to figure out a way to make the same CBA jokes week after week seem at least vaguely original. As a sports fan, though, like I'm actually not too worried for the first few months. I'm a diehard NFL fan, so I'm okay through like January, you know, through the regular season, through the playoffs, I'm okay. It's going to be when if they're still going, then that's when it's going to get really tough on me. I can live with the NFL for a while. I might even I might take a look at the NBA, but I know that that's not true. I probably never will. But and then I'll check out the rest. I mean, you know, as a Leaf fan, I'll pay some attention to the Marlies for sure. I mean, if they do any of these rumored kind of international All-Star tourneys or challenge series, then that should be fun to watch. You know, and then just sort of fill it in as we go. But no, I mean, I'll probably fill most of the time just continually checking my fantasy football team and praying that it magically got better overnight.
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, that's the one option I have. I mean, it's weird. And it's sad, so when we're talking about this already. Ray Flowers, who does the fantasy hockey show over at SiriusXM, called me yesterday. He's like, you know, I know I'm having you kind of as a quasi co-host. Like, all right, come mid-October. What the heck are we going to talk about? Just came out right with it.
Yep. No, I mean that. Everyone's doing the same thing, right? I mean, it's if you've got any sort of role where you're covering the NHL, it's tough, especially because you know that CBA talks. It's not like there's a lot of news. There's a lot of there's speculation, there's rumors, all that sort of stuff. But there's so little news to talk about that you just end up beating the same stuff into the ground if you're not careful.
Yeah, I mean that was our goal. When we sat there and looked. I was at first it caught me a little off guard. Then I started looking around, and once you started looking around, you realize going, okay, we can do this. We're gonna do some pretty crazy stuff with this. We might as well take advantage of it. Nobody else is gonna try it. And I have a copy. I have just a ridiculous amount of copies of magazines that I've contributed to in one way or the other, and. Every one of them sits there and assumes that magically we're going to have an 82-game season, everyone's going to be happy, and that we're all going to be okay. And obviously the reality is that's not going to happen.
Yep.
So the goal is, well, okay, now what? And it's this brilliant question that honestly was asked to me by, well, my girlfriend, of course. See, kids, let this be a lesson to you. The woman is always right, one. Two, if the woman knows hockey, you keep her, and you keep her very close to your heart because, well, basically, if you don't, you're screwed. But in this case in particular, it's true. Shortened season projections are going to be essential now, which means... honestly, I get to have some fun with it, and a little bit of a sense of humor, too. For example, and here's the classic, everybody knows it's coming, Marion Gaborik, ladies and gentlemen. So if he does manage to recover by December, he'll produce this many points. If he gets injured in a freak ski accident and comes back in January, this many points. It's to that point. You have to now... change the focus completely.
Chris, did you get the link I sent to you just now?
Yes.
Oh, my
now,
God.
I can't believe this. Now, of course, lo and behold, I'm reading this. Now, why is this? All right. I'll try to quantify this with a good conscience, even though I can't. Everybody saw, we talked about it even just in the beginning of the show. Forbes came out with this article a week ago, Mr. Eklund, a week ago. I love this. This is amazing. I mean, it looks almost... how can I put this in the nicest of ways? Not plagiarism, because you can't really call it that.
Yeah, but you could call on him blaming the fans.
Is it a strong level of inspiration that you're seeing there?
It looks like...
Desperate, if you want to call it that. And yes, I'm going to make up that word if possible.
Yeah, you can't call that inspiration, though. You really can't. God, I mean, he could have at least sat there and put in a pizza pie.
Yeah.
God, why can't somebody come up... Wait a minute. We have the right person to do it. Who are we kidding? What we need is not a flow chart. No, Sean. That would be too much here. We need an old-fashioned pizza pie. With how the NHL jokingly derives its revenue from. Not the actual reason at this point. Just because of this. I mean, I can't believe it. I saw the same exact article last Sunday. Now, the words are obviously different, and things are reversed and such. And there's some different quotes from other players, and I understand that. But why on earth would you rehash something like this? And the worst part is, it came out, let's see, tell me what, 1 o'clock this morning, right?
Supposedly.
It has 200 and something comments already. That's what scares me. And I kid you not, the numbers aren't even right. I mean, let's see. The CBA, I'll read some of it. We'll try to do this real fast. The CBA of 2005 worked swimmingly well for the owners. No, it really didn't, because they screwed up even then. When the NHL was a $2 billion a year business, it was two? I thought it was 2.1. I swear. Okay, that's brass tacks, fair enough. But apparently fails horribly when it is making $3 billion a year.
I thought it was 3.3.
Yeah, I'm not bad with math, I swear. But I'm amazed by this. It's like reading the article from a week ago, just with a few different wrinkles. And, of course, the best part is the Hockey Buzz promise. I did not know that Eklund was the new Obama. I went there. I mean, I don't know. And this is part of the reason why we're never going to have them on the show. And the sad part is, a lot of the writers on there are extremely good writers. I'm good friends with quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the show. I cannot, Sean, I may be wrong on this, but Eklund to me is like a caricature of himself.
Yeah, the great part, Chris, is you know what spawned the great Eklund empire is the 2004 NHL lockout,
yep.
And anyone was desperate for information. And then even though we all figured out, you know, the bio wasn't right, story didn't add up, it still became popular. I mean, I remember the great Greg Wyshynski article from 2007, one of the finest pieces of internet journalism I've ever seen, because I had to approve
internet
it.
Internet takedown journalism.
It was epic. I mean, if anyone ever wants it, I have it bookmarked on my computer because it's just an epic piece of journalism, and it was tremendous. But you know, this is what the lockout does. It's a void of information. You know, if you're an owner, you comment, you're fined. You're going to give up draft picks. You know, the players obviously have their propaganda and their story, and you know, obviously the league has their arm, but. You know, nothing's going to happen for a while. And, you know, even though they're talking, they're just, you know, kind of setting some small stuff. But, you know, it's a slow, deliberate process, and people hate it. But it's a way, you know, big sports labor is right now.
And I think Chris said it best before. Back when Eklund was making his name, there wasn't the Twitter, Facebook, social media network where people could share actual information, and everybody was grasping to find out whatever they could. And for better or worse, many people stumbled upon him. You know, now I think it's a little bit more transparent. And there's a lot more options. Who knows if he would have that success if he were trying to get started today. But, you know, he's out there, and it's just a matter of, you know, trying to keep everybody informed. But you know, you're right.
He'd have the same amount of success today if he were to start today as Hockey Insider would.
Fair point.
And Chris's error one, I think Facebook was in its infancy during the lockout. It actually was created in February of 2004. So for what it's worth, it was around. It just wasn't what you saw today.
It was actually called the Facebook, too.
Yes, it was.
I think the funniest
Ivy League Limited then, I think.
I think someone asked me a couple weeks ago, like, why is hockey full of, you know, these quote-unquote insiders? You know, baseball doesn't have them, football doesn't have them, basketball doesn't have them. It's such a weird part of the hockey culture to have people who pretend they're part of teams or were part of teams, and it's amazing. You know, of course, we all know that another lockout could spawn another group of quote-unquote journalists who are quote-unquote insiders, so it's just interesting how hockey's taken to this.
I like to think it's because hockey fans are the most passionate, and some people just happen to take that a little bit beyond passionate to crazy.
That's probably accurate, just because it's just funny to see. You know, it's you know, certain people you can see is, you know, half the people follow them, take them seriously, half the people follow them because it's, you know, kind of for a laugh.
Hey, look at this right now. At least the good thing about the Twitter age now is we've spawned the parody inside of it. Some of them are out of control, and there's too many of them. But there are some that definitely do nail it. At least I can live with the dodos that just don't know what they're doing.
As far as though, Chris, getting a laugh, none of them are as reliably consistent as go to for hockey humor as good old Down Goes Brown.
Very much so. And the evil British lady has informed me that there's 60 seconds left. I swear one of these days I'm going to take this British lady in strength, and I can't do that. But I will try anyway. Obviously, I want to thank, before we go into the archive or the overtime, I like to personally thank Ted Starkey for coming on with us. Of course.
Always a pleasure.
Down Goes Brown. And I have one thing to play for everybody before we leave, and one thing only. You're going to get 15 seconds of Brass Bonanza. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday night.
Go Whale!